interview with Bob Hardesty, H-A-R-D-E-S-T-Y, press secretary to Governor Dolph Bristow, Austin, Texas, December 11th, 1974.
Personality then still prevails in Texas politics.
Oh yeah.
Was Yarbrough an exception to that, or did he also reflect that? Was that a neat, or was that more ideological?
Well, he managed to finally, after many tries, put together the liberal part of the state and the old populist elements of the state to win election to. And they're still very loyal, intensely loyal to him. I don't know whether you picked up the deep hatred, bitterness the liberals have. Benson, they'll never forgive. They'll do anything in the world to keep him from being nominated. And it is. I think it's just as far as you go, they'll just never forgive him for not being nominated.
Was the bitterness as much, his degree of bitterness involved in that campaign, a reaction to Benson defeating Yarbrough, or what the Yarbrough supporters perceived to be the objection to the tactics used? The emotionalism in the campaign and the advertising.
Oh, I think but I think basically it was just fact that they lost. It's not bold, I assume.
You think that's the end of the liberal bloc in terms of electing statewide officers?
No, I don't think so. I'm relatively new to Texas. You're not really talking to an expert. I didn't come down here till 69. But I think you're going to see in Texas in the years ahead increasing importance on the suburbanites around your big cities who haven't really been a factor in politics up to now. Northerners who've moved down here to go work for this company and that company. These people, polls we've taken indicate they're not particularly party-oriented. I think anybody who can put together, who can hold a base, whether it's a conservative base or a liberal base or a moderate base, who then can personally appeal to these people, can win an election. And nobody's really done that yet.
Where do you see that coming?
It's hard to tell. Could be 4 years from now. But this is politically sort of an untapped resource. As I say, they don't align themselves with a political party. I think they tend to be more conservative now. But I think it's a kind of a swing vote that you get an economic hard time and you find them switching toward Democratic candidates. Unemployment starts shooting up and they get worried about their jobs and making car payments.
Hasn't Tower been able to do that? Work from a conservative?
Excuse me?
Tower, hasn't he been able to do that? Work from a conservative base, pick up the suburban vote?
I guess.
What's your own background, though?
I was in Washington. I went there to go to school at GW, and I stayed on there, did some newspaper work there. I was John Ganowski's speechwriter when he was Postmaster General, and then 65. I got borrowed by the White House for 2 weeks. That lasted. I stayed with Johnson 7 years. Came down here with him after he left office to help him write his memoirs. And then in the spring of 72, Carl Albert asked me to come back up to Washington to put together a research and issues operation for House Democrats during the 72 campaign. And after that, when Governor Briscoe was elected, I'd never met him. I was up in Aspen skiing, and he called and asked me if I'd come talk to him next time I was in Austin. And he wanted me to become his press secretary. Very taken by the man. So I got him.
How do you assess his first term?
I think he surprised a lot of people. Everybody has referred to him as a conservative, and he is a fiscal conservative. But his relation to people, he's a very compassionate man. He's got very good instincts. And your minorities have found this out. They get to him and they tell him what this problem is or what that problem is. He'll react very compassionately, in a very, very sound, progressive manner to their problems. He's been very fair with the black and brown caucuses. And I think a great deal of people have been surprised by that. Managed to get along well with labor, so I, you know, while his image I think is still a conservative, I don't think, you know, the label really fits. He came in, he put together a legislative package. Which was fairly limited in scope, but some real sound achievements, insurance reform, marijuana reform, which was a two-pronged thing that writes different laws for the pushers and more lenient laws for first offenders for possession of marijuana. This year, I think he'll be going with a much more broad legislative program in all areas. As I say, he's...
Has he taken a position on the Utilities Commission?
Yeah. We haven't really gotten to the point, we will in probably a week or so, on the specifics. His general position is that he feels we need a Utilities Commission primarily to offer expertise to the smaller communities which don't have the expertise, research ability to regulate utilities. He does not look upon it, he does not feel we ought to have a utilities, a broad umbrella Utilities Commission come in and take over everything. He doesn't believe that the big cities particularly want the state to take over that function. He thinks some of the smaller communities would. So the way he envisions it, the commission would provide any of the research and backup and expertise a community wants. If a community wants to get out of it altogether, they could request the Utilities Commission to take over their function. But it would be a local option. Telephone installation charges, intrastate long distance calls, possibly for gas and electricity. And I imagine we'll end up with something like that. I think there's enough resistance to an overall Utilities Commission that probably wouldn't pass.
What's the resistance based on?
Based on people don't think that we need a super agency in the state to handle.
Texas is the only state, am I correct, without one?
Yeah, now I don't know what the other states have. I mean, if they all have an umbrella type of agency or whether it's a modified form, I've not done any studies on that to see. But apparently it's the only state without some form of utilities commission.
You think the governor is going to become more active in the next 4 years in proposing programs than he has been in the past 2?
Yeah.
Is there substance to the charge that he didn't really propose much in the first 2 years that he was in office?
No. His general attitude has been when he feels a need of something, a particular piece of legislation, and some member of the legislature has a bill that he's in general agreement with, he won't go on with his own bill. He'll just support that bill and work to secure that passage. But
now, there wasn't any identified administration program in 73 as such.
Well, I guess the most highly identifiable one was the drug reform law. Insurance reforms, he came into office, as did all the new elected statewide officials, on a platform of reform, opening government, tougher campaign reporting laws, open records, open meetings, this sort of thing. So they were all identified with that.
Did you get most of those?
Yeah.
Any specific changes in labor-oriented legislation that resulted in his improved relationship? I mean, did they
have... Workman's compensation.
Or was that increased benefits?
Yeah, we were at the bottom of the heap. 472. I haven't been 72.
And how about now?
State. Well, I suppose we're about the middle now. I think the main thing was that in the past, many governors have been labor baiters, really. You know, they just assume have labor against them to solidify the conservative base. Briscoe wouldn't do that. He felt they wanted to talk to him. Express their concern, they ought to be able to come in and do it. He's kept up good lines of communication with them. He made some good appointments. They like from the labor ranks. It's been mostly a matter of communication and appointments.
Has he appointed more union members and blacks, Chicanos, than any other governor?
Well, it's hard to say more than any other governor because he's only had 2 years to do it, but I think definitely say that he's appointed more in the time he's been in. Chicano was here 6 years. I don't know that anybody's done a study, but the blacks and browns and the labor people tell us there's never been a period where there have been more appointed.
How about on his staff?
Probably more Mexican-Americans on his staff than any other governors had. The only real identifiable top member who was black is the director of the Office of the Equal Employment Opportunity.
Does that office function beyond the scope of the title? Does it involve strictly with employment, or does it handle grievances of various sorts?
No. Let me give you a little background on that.
And also, is that his creation, or is that an office already here?
Oh, there was a rider to an appropriation bill which created the Office of Equal Employment Opportunity in the governor's office. He supported that.
This was in 73.
73, right. He created the office. We got Lorenzo Cole, who was the deputy director of the federal office in Houston. Regional office. And last winter sometime, the Attorney General ruled that the rider was unconstitutional because of the technicality. And he immediately announced that he was going to, okay, just going to keep the office going on executive order. The only writ that that had been given from the legislature anyway was to encourage agencies to develop affirmative action plans. I think the office has gone beyond that as much as they can in rejecting affirmative action plans. They didn't really have that authority to work with the agencies. What it's going to develop into now, I don't know. I assume there'll be a movement to strengthen the office. We're also going to propose that there be a state personnel agency created. And when that happens, I assume that'll affect the EEO operation too.
But there's no general state agency dealing with complaints of discrimination against minorities as such.
And that's why, it'll probably have to be strengthened, the office. Either that or you just get the federal government moving.
But does he act as the governor's representative with minority groups other than just areas, other than just appoint the governor's special representative to blacks?
He works very closely with the Black Caucus. Of course, the governor deals directly with himself. Rudy Flores, the governor's special assistant, works with Browns a great deal. It's not a formalized thing, is what I'm trying to say. You know, some of them will come to him.
There's no commission on human relations, or
anything. No. It's really a fractured state government, as you found out probably by now.
You're going to move towards a merit system?
I don't know.
But you're going to create a state personnel?
Yeah, it will
in
not.
In the governor's office?
No, it'll be an independent agency. It will not be a civil service type thing, which does centralize hiring and firing. The agencies will probably maintain that function, but it will be an area that takes over all these other functions.
Is Governor Briscoe going to make any effort in the next 4 years to reorganize state government?
I don't know.
You've got 200 and some agencies, boards, and commissions now.
Yeah. We'll be having some reorganization.
I was thinking about a real fundamental thing, like collapsing them down into 15 or 20 departments or something.
Well, you're going to need some constitutional revision to do that in many cases. He's prepared to announce probably this week a recommendation to abolish the Mass Transit Commission and put that under the Highway Department and create a new Department of Highway and Transit. I imagine we'll be seeing more of these things.
Think there'll be another effort of constitutional reform in the next
year? Yeah, but what it is, God knows what form it'll take. There are some who think they ought to go ahead and create a Citizens Commission. Others think they ought to, the governor does, they ought to work on the foundation that they've already laid, the expertise they've already developed, report out article by article for the people to vote on. He thinks it's much more realistic to do it that way, to try to go off with an entirely new document and get the people. In my judgment, if we report it out, if they passed a new constitution this year, that people wouldn't have passed it. People are very suspicious of government in Texas.
Why?
Well, I don't know. They're just traditionally, they're again government, again big government, again a lot of change. And you heard there was no great outcry against the creation of the Constitutional Convention. People passed it, but the more it went on, the more you just pick up all of this, say, well, I don't know, we seem to be doing all right with the present Constitution. I don't see any point in changing it. That just became just general attitude.
What sort of legislation is there on open meetings and open records?
They passed a tough open meetings and open records law last time, the 63rd legislature. I'm not a lawyer, I can't go into that.
What sort of exceptions do you have on meetings?
My understanding, most of the exceptions have to do with confidential personnel matters.
How about legislative committees?
I don't think there's such a thing as an executive session. I may be mistaken. I have a feeling that all their meetings are open.
How do you assess press coverage of the legislature in Texas?
I think it's pretty good. I was just talking to Garth Jones of Associated Press yesterday. He may not be familiar with the movement now to throw the press off the floor.
And I read about it.
He was arguing with a couple other members. Really didn't feel there was any problem with it. And someone said, "Well, you know, hell, they haven't been." They're not allowed on the floor in Congress. And he said, yeah, and look, because of the coverage again. And I think it's a point pretty well taken. They cover it pretty intensely, pretty thoroughly. Now, the way the papers carry the story, that's something else. But you've got a pretty good-sized press corps out there. And they cover it pretty thoroughly. They did a fantastic job of covering the Constitutional Convention. Just unbelievable. Long stories every day. Sometimes two and three stories, sidebar. Basically a pretty good bunch of reporters.
Is there much investigative reporting?
Yes. Yeah, you've got four or five reporters out there who are really top-notch investigative reporters and really digging things. Dave Montgomery, Dallas Times Herald, Daryl Hancock, you know, Fred Bonavita, Post. Probably not as much as they'd like. I suppose if you talk to any of them, they'd all say we're short-handed. Don't really have time to cover the committee hearings and the other thing and do the investigative reporter would like, but they're always stirring something.
How many papers have more than one man in the Capitol?
Well, the Dallas Morning News has five. Houston Post has three. Dallas Times Herald has two. Fort Worth Star-Telegram has two. You've got good-sized AP and UPI bureaus. Houston Chronicle has four. The Austin American Capital Bureau has four. And the rest of them are one-man operations. Coastal Publications, one. San Antonio Life. Well, this long news service handles San Antonio Life too, so you really can't say that they only have one man.
What kind of job do they do?
Long?
Yeah.
Good job. Real good pick and shovel work. Not only, you know, they do a good job of servicing their local papers, but they, Stuart Long probably knows as much about state government as any man alive. The intricate things, the board rulings, and water quality, and this sort of thing that other papers really just, you know, gloss over. He does a very good job reporting the stories.
How was the television coverage?
Well, we're hampered in Texas because it's so big, and there's no such thing as a state network. It's spotty by necessity. You've only got really one out of town full-time TV staff here. That's Joel Smith out of Houston. The rest of them will come and go, send a crew in for a story they want to cover. The governor has a press conference. They'll send somebody in.
Does the governor have regular press conferences?
Not really. Not really.
He doesn't meet with them weekly or monthly?
No.
Just at your call?
Just sort of play it by ear. When he'll meet with individual reporters on individual queries and that sort of thing in his office. But there's no regular press conference.
What's he going to do with all the money?
What's that?
$1.5 billion, the surplus.
Oh, it's not going to take long. The biggest problem is going to be to keep from spending it all. Because surpluses come fast and they go fast, too. He wants to keep a reserve of $200 million set aside for any emergencies. Our new school aid, our new school, public school package is going to be expensive as hell.
This is when plans proposed already is proposed.
Plans proposed. Still working on the final details.
What's the sort of basics part?
Oh, it's very complicated.
Is that the proposal to equalize?
Yeah.
This is growing directly out of Rodriguez's case.
Yes. It's based on a weighted pupil approach that they've broken down types of education and how much it costs per pupil to teach that type of course. A general college preparatory course is X dollars per pupil. An agricultural course is a little more expensive. Some of your more sophisticated career-oriented courses are the most expensive. You need specialized equipment, that sort of thing. And the objective is to get the money into the areas. Well, let me see if I can explain it a better way. You pay the school almost exactly on the basis of what they're teaching. If they say that so many students are in this type of course, we know exactly what that type of course should cost. Now, when we're talking about these figures are based on 27 school districts that we went into that we were told were running the best courses in these areas. We found out how much it cost them to give these types of courses. The idea is to bring the entire floor up to that point. You have a new floor.
So it's related to the quality of the instruction rather than the tax base.
That's right. Now, it's also, as far as the financial aspects of it is concerned, it's related on the amount of money the state pays into it is related to the local school district's ability to raise money. Your poor school districts are making a much greater effort.
You don't
and yet not
state.
Raising enough money to have decent education. Some of your other school districts, which have oil, or refinery or something.
It does not go so far as the state taking over the public school system for financing.
No, it's just a whole new way of the state's minimum foundation program of financing the district.
I was going to ask you that. Do you know of any other state that uses that in the formula for state aid? Quality?
I don't know.
I haven't heard of that.
Hooker has gone all over the country and examined what all the other states have done. And he feels from the particular needs of Texas, this is the way we ought to handle it.
Is that going to be one of the major efforts of this administration?
Oh, it'll be the big one. It'll be the big one.
This will involve then considerable additional state funding rather than redistribution of the existing funds.
Yeah. It'll be a probably $1 billion-plus package.
Do you see any other major move, Bob, in say, highway construction or mental health or prison? Or do you think education is going to be the major problem that this administration grapples with?
Well, it'll be the biggest one. We'll have a youth care package, which is not completed yet. Which will be a very big one. Excuse me. Water program. Try to get water to the water deficit areas in the state.
Are you talking about that plan to transport water from Louisiana across Texas and that?
I don't know what form it's going to come up.
Is that thing really still alive?
I presume in some form. Prison reform, obviously the legislature has already gotten into that. It's going to happen on that. The right of privacy, the governor would like to have a good, tough bill tracking down on logging and tapping. It'll probably designed on the federal bill.
How about campaign reform, expenditures, contributions?
Well, there'll be Mark White, the Secretary of State, is working on that right now. He has said that he'd be very amenable to a limitation if it's realistic. He doesn't want to see an expenditure limitation that would work in favor of the incumbents.
It's pretty tough to do. This is by definition every limitation does work.
Well, that's right. That's why he has some reservations about it. But there's got to be a realistic figure somewhere.
What kind of a guy is Briscoe?
Very private person, extremely intelligent guy, very sharp mind. He's a banker and rancher, and he's got an ability I've seen in very few people. He can see through a snow job so fast. Somebody would come in and try to con him with some figures and things. Something would just click in his mind. So there's something wrong there, and he'll just go right to the figure that had been. Whizzed by him about 10 minutes ago, and I said, well, now, wait a minute. You said such and such. Now, that doesn't jive with this.
Does he like being governor?
Yeah.
Good administrator? Does he get along with the legislature?
He gets along very well with them. He sort of has an open door policy, and they come and go, and they complain. Of course, you know, there's always a certain number of them mad at him for any one issue. They usually manage to get it worked out. On the campaign reform, he's already said that he'd like to see a limitation of $10 on any cash contribution. One stage of the game, he said, I just want to see all cash contributions outlawed, and then people prevailed on him and said, well, this just prevents little old ladies from sending in their dollar. And he said, well, all right, but I don't want to go above $10. Get rid of these big cash funds floating around the campaign. did not accept any cash in the past campaign. Somebody wanted to come in with cash and said, go down and get a cashier's check and bring it on in. So everything could be recorded. I don't know what else Mark's working on. I assume it'll be a fairly extensive package. Have you seen a copy of the Democratic platform?
Texas?
Yeah. Let me give you a copy of that. You can look it over, and that will come in form. Legislation, education, public utility. Youth care will be a big package. HMOs, I think, will probably be a pretty big issue.
ERA, has ERA passed in this state, equal rights?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now there's a move on to repeal it.
Is there a move for the state to move into HMOs?
Not to move into them, just to pass enabling legislation. Have you talked to Joe Christie, Don?
No.
Who have you talked to? Funny guy. All the time I was at the White House. He and Johnson worked very closely together. Never had any problems in Washington. But as soon as one of them had come across the border back down here, get involved in local politics. It was almost a paranoia. Just cutting each other.
On both their parts?
Well, by that time, Johnson didn't need to do it anymore. I don't know what went on before, you know, being a relative newcomer, this sort of thing. But Johnson just refused to get involved in the Benson Yarbrough primary. He says, I just can't do it. I was out there one day when other Benson people were trying to get him to support Benson. And he said, I was just looking over the legislation that passed. He said, every one of those things is just the enjoyment service supporting these things. He said, I can't oppose Yarbrough. Yarbrough never believed it. Believe it to his dying day. But it's just a funny relationship. Yarbrough couldn't do enough for Johnson. I got down here, I was just surprised at the depth of animosity the Yarbrough supported.
That's quite a guy.
Come great on. Man.
Did Johnson participate much in Texas politics when he came back?
No.
While he was president, did he?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Of course, McConnell down here participated through McConnell. Kind of was sort of holding down the door. I don't think I think as long as Connor was there, he didn't have to worry about it too much. And that's why Connor told him in the fall of 67 that he didn't want to run again, but Johnson was planning on being on the ticket. He would run. And Johnson said, don't make any of your plans based on what I'm going to do. On that basis, Connor.
When Connally moved to the Republican Party, there wasn't very much movement, apparently, of other Democrats.
No.
Why is that? Concerning his popularity and how long he's been in Texas politics?
Well, I guess for personal reasons and local reasons, a lot of Democrats vote Republican anyway, but feel more comfortable in their communities being known as Democrats.
You think there would have been a substantial move if Connally had not run into his other problems, in particular so quickly?
I really don't know whether there would have been a great movement. People registered as Republicans. They had a huge personal following. They would have voted for him. Would have supported money.
votes.
But I'm not convinced it would revitalize the Republican Party unless Conley decided to run for governor as a Republican or something like that. But Texans are content. Conservatives are content to be known as Democrats and vote Democratic local in most state races, vote Republican national.
What's it going to take to make them vote for a Democratic candidate for president?
Oh, I suppose a lot of it depends on the state of the economy. A lot of it depends on the Democrat.
Benson got a chance?
At this stage of the game, I assume he's got as good a chance as anybody else.
Do most people in the party here treat that seriously?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. But you know, a year and a half is a long time off. Four years ago, everybody in Washington just assumed that Muskie was lead pipe cents for the nomination in '72. So you've seen an awful lot of this. You've seen what happened to Romney. You can't predict what one little incident is going to do to anybody. Somebody that nobody even think about might come along. Nobody out in the Midwest had ever heard of Adlai Stevenson until spring '52. June was more or less lifting, you know, from obscurity. So. Were you with Romney? You know, that was the damnedest thing I think I've ever seen in politics. And I think that was just entirely a press creation. To this day, I can't see what in the world is wrong with saying he was brainwashed.
I don't think.
I mean, it's just amazing, I mean, to me that the people would accept the press's word on the basis that he was unqualified to be president because of that remark. Nobody ever stopped to think what the remark meant or whether it was really such a terrible thing to say. The pundits just assumed that.
They made the judgment he wasn't qualified to be president because of that.
Everybody followed him.
Where do you see how do you assess the Democratic Party in Texas now? What are its component parts?
Oh, I'd say there are. You have your conservatives, and at the moment, your Wallaceites.
Who would be some of the leaders identified with those factions?
Well, I don't know if you've got. Well, Hall DeManus, of course, is the Wallace leader in the state.
But when you say the conservatives in the Democratic Party, who could you say are typical office holders or leaders identified with that fashion?
Well, I don't know if you really got any out front people. Again, that depends on what race you're talking about, too. I presume Brown's a big Benson supporter, and you wouldn't consider Benson conservative. There's really nobody speaking for the conservatives that I can think of outside the legislature, but on a statewide level. Your statewide elected officials now, you'd have to call them moderates. Governor Hoppe, hill.
Has this new...
Bob, they're moderate in what sense? On race or fiscal matters? Or what does moderate mean in Texas?
Well, moderate means, it's my way of thinking, you're not race baiting. Moderate means you're not picking fight of labor. Moderate means you're willing to look at progressive legislation, programs that help people. And moderate means you're just not against everything that comes up. Not just trying to hold the line. You recognize needs, problems in the state. What would be moderate here might be considered conservative. In Michigan or Wisconsin, Minnesota. But you have to look at it from this point of view.
Is it a way to approach problems more than it is a set of programs?
Yeah, it's a point of view.
Yeah. It's just, there's no more race baiting in this state, is there?
Well, you know, depends on where you go, locally.
But not statewide race. You say that
the reason I'm breaking it out that way was really that's just sort of the way our delegation broke out in Kansas City. The liberals.
How do the liberals differ now from the moderates?
In many respects, well, they want, obviously they want to do more, they want to do faster, they're less concerned.